This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Beyond the Beauty is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Bobby Brown. I get asked a lot of questions from so many women about what to do to stay looking young, to stay looking healthy. My advice is always the same. Start with what you're putting in your body, number one. And then, you know what? There's so many things that you could do to look better without altering the way you look. So my philosophy of aging, and I don't even like that word because we are all aging, and that's a good thing. It's not negative. But my philosophy is, if there's things that are really bothering you, examine how you could make them better without changing your face. I am not a fan of fillers because most fillers, I could see when people put it in their face. It doesn't always work perfectly. I'm sure there are plenty of fillers in people's face that look great. I have seen a lot that haven't. Do I wish I had less lines in my face? Yes, but I don't even bother that energy because there's nothing I could do about it. And I find that when I'm rested and I am hydrated from the inside out and I have the right moisturizers and creams on my skin, I can handle my age. I wanted to have a dermatologist on the podcast because there's so many questions I want to ask him about what can be done without altering your face. I first started seeing Dr. Glashofer because I was concerned about thinning hair and just what happens to hair as you get older. He also has a condition called alopecia, which means he doesn't have any hair, but he happens to be a hair loss expert, probably because he was a hair loss patient. He has a lot to teach about our concerns. Here is my conversation with Dr. Mark Glashofer. Dr. Mark Glashofer, is that how I said it?
That's correct.
Okay, pretty good. A dermatologist, but more than a dermatologist, an expert in not only skin, but also an expert in hair loss.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm expert in hair loss, as well as I'm fellowship trained in Mohs micrographic surgery and cosmetic dermatology. And for those who don't know, Mohs surgery, spelled M-O-H-S, named after the surgeon who invented the technique, is a way of delicately removing skin cancers from usually head and neck and other sensitive areas of the body.
Ah, okay. Well, very interesting. The other thing about Dr. Glashofer, he's my dermatologist, and I went to see him first because of hair loss. And when I walked in to say hello, because he was recommended to me by another dermatologist, and when I went in to say hello, the first thing I noticed is that he didn't have any hair. So your story is that you were diagnosed as a kid with alopecia?
Yeah, so it is ironic that I've gotten into this field. You know, when people walk in, they're dealing with hair loss, and the first thing they see is this shiny dome and a gentleman who has no hair and tattooed eyebrows, and they're like, "Well, am I in the right place?"
And but a really cute face. So not many guys look good with tattooed eyebrows. And yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. Yeah. So my story and what sort of partially led me on this path is I was diagnosed at the age of 8 with alopecia areata. When people refer to alopecia, that's generally meaning hair loss. But alopecia areata is a specific form of hair loss that's an autoimmune condition. So basically, my body and people that have this condition, our body's immune system gets confused. And instead of attacking bad things like viruses and bacteria and, God forbid, cancers, it attacks our own selves, our own auto-self. And so in my case, it attacks it very efficiently, and I have no hair. So I have a form of alopecia areata called alopecia universalis, which is a more extreme form.
Of course, you had to get the better one. Of course.
Of course. Yeah. Well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right.
Yeah.
But it was an evolving process. And so when I was first diagnosed, what I remember or constructed at this point in life is that when I was 8 years old, my father took me to the barber, and the barber pointed out a quarter-sized bald patch. And I've heard a lot of patients tell me that story, kind of that an initial, original patch. And then I don't really remember it till I was around 12 or so. Coincidentally, I was diagnosed with some form of Crohn's.
At 12?
Yep.
Wow.
And so I was on steroids at that point, which is one of the treatments for alopecia areata. So it probably masked the progression to later on. And then I remember through high school and junior high and high school, just sort of kind of having various patches of loss. I would go to dermatologists. It's one of the reasons I'm in dermatology is one of my mentors, one of the doctors I was seeing, Dr. Larry Miller, who passed about a year ago, he evolved into a very close friend of mine, and he guided me into his condition. And I used to go to him every 6 weeks for shots and light therapy. And as you could tell, nothing really helped, but he really provided me with a lot of comfort. Basically, from about 12 to 16, 17 or so, I had patchy hair loss. And then I remember distinctly my senior year of high school, I was in the middle of a soccer game. My brother was there. And I remember coming off the sidelines and sweating, and I wiped my face. And this shocked look came over his face and some of my teammates. I kind of had wiped off like half my brow.
Wow.
I didn't quite know that till the game was over. Obviously devastating, and you don't really know, you know, where to go with that. So I started doing shots of cortisone in the eyebrows, which it helped. The cortisone shots that I was getting from Dr. Miller, I would grow a patch of hair back, and then I would develop another patch, and it's sort of like chasing your tail. As things progressed, I started losing eyelashes right before starting college. So kind of a, you know, tough way to start freshman year.
Yeah.
It kind of went into, I'm actually remission. I did a treatment when I was around 23 that grew on my hair back, on my scalp.
What kind of treatment?
So, yes, that's one of the things I want to touch on. It was basically, it's called immunotherapy. And you apply a substance, a chemical, to the scalp that causes a mild irritation. And the concept is that you're creating an inflammatory response on the skin that draws the inflammatory cells from the hair follicle away and takes it somewhere else. It's like a better party for the inflammatory cells to go to, and it allows the hair to grow. And it worked for me, but it then stopped working. And unfortunately, that's somewhat the case with a lot of the treatments for this specific form of hair loss, is that sometimes things work for one person and don't work for another person, or sometimes things work and then they stop working. And then after that treatment, all of a sudden in med school, over a one-month period of time, I lost about 70% of my hair.
Stress?
I was on a particularly tough and challenging rotation at that time. Kind of can't stop. You can't just not show up for rounds and things of that nature. And then next thing I know, I was down to about 10%. Then it was time to, you know, just shave off the last little wisps. And since then, I've had the clean look that you see.
Do you have any hair on your head? Like, do you have to shave it at all, or now it's nothing?
I occasionally will get a wisp of hair, which is kind of funny.
You don't try to comb it over or
exactly.
Anything?
It's sort of like this little, like, Snoopy hair that goes up, and my daughter gets excited and thinks it's funny, but she wants to pluck it out right when it comes. But the thing that was the best for me, ironically, is that after I lost it all, and everybody was like, you know, wow, you look so good, or oh, this is, and it was sort of like this kind of coming out type situation where I was like, oh gosh, like how different and awkward must I have looked over all this time, and nobody wanted to say anything. And now it's like a chance for everybody to be like, this is good, embrace this. So it's kind of like finally not having to fight or worry about, is this patch going to come? Is this going to grow back? It was sort of like, all right, this is it. This is who I am. This is down to the core. Obviously still working on that. But
I think there's a couple actors that finally just took their hair pieces off. I don't know. Was it John Travolta? I don't remember. And it's like, you know what? So what? It's okay.
Exactly.
It's okay.
For me, I'd say, you know, back then it was probably Michael Jordan was one of the few people that, you know, could really rock that look. You know, it's hard growing up with this type of condition. And nowadays I look around and I'm like, wait a second. I had to have so much grief growing up with this. Now everybody just has my look.
And when did you get your eyebrows tattooed?
So approximately 21, 22. To my aunts took me around to some makeup artists. We were trying to get the right brow color and stencils and shapes, and it was horrendous. And I was actually trying to draw my brows on. I'm not very artistic in that sense, and came upon somebody who's a phenomenal cosmetic makeup artist, and she does the tattooing. And so since then, I've had it done, and I've had some touch-ups along the way.
Well, this is a podcast, and no one could see what you look like, but you don't look weird. At all. Like, you look normal.
Well, thank you.
Like, you just look like some guy that has, like, a shaved head.
Ironically, after so many years of having to explain myself of what I have, ironically, now people come up to me. Like, I remember this when I was interviewing for dermatology positions. And I was in Penn Station in a particularly creepy bathroom. And this gentleman came up and he was, like, insistent on finding out what my secret was for shaving my head. He was like, what magic solution do I use? What blade do I use? What direction or angle do I go in? And I kept insisting on telling him, you know, that this is not something I shave. And I don't think he was completely coherent. And he was getting angrier and angrier with my response. I wasn't actually giving him my secret. But I have that from time to time. A lot of patients come in and say, what do you do? And I explain, this is the condition. And what's nice about with the role that I play with having so much exposure to patients is that when I tell people that this is not something that I actually chose, but I have this condition, people say, oh, that's interesting. You know, Bob in accounting has this, or my next door neighbor's child has this. So it sort of increases awareness.
Yeah, certainly the first person I heard was a friend of a friend, a girl who was making mushroom tea, which now turns out to be kombucha, because she was told that that would help. So I don't know if things like that help.
No, there's no clinically proven rigorous studies to show that. A lot of things with the hair are coincidence sometimes, for whatever the reason is, especially with what I have, the alopecia areata. If you get it later in life, sometimes it develops as a patch that just spontaneously regrows, and we don't know why it happened, why things got off kilter. And so there's a lot of times spontaneous regrowth can occur. And so if you're doing X, Y, and Z, we sometimes like to attribute it to that, but it often isn't the case. It just happens.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
So we're going to talk about what works and what doesn't work, in your opinion, but what are the causes of hair loss, particularly in women?
Absolutely. So you can break down the causes in terms of inflammatory and non-inflammatory. That's one way of looking at it. In terms of inflammatory conditions, they're rare. So we talked about what I have, the alopecia areata. There's rare conditions, something called lichen planopilaris, or a variation of that called frontal fibrosing alopecia, which is being diagnosed a little bit more. And women come in with often a very itchy or painful scalp, and a particular type of hair loss, which is clinically recognizable. You want to treat that sooner rather than later because it's actually a scarring form of hair loss. It's another way of categorizing hair loss between scarring and non-scarring, meaning the hair follicles themselves are scarred down. And if they're scarred from the inflammation, you're not going to grow more hair through that follicle, through that opening. So you really want to treat that early. Rarer forms of alopecia can be seen in patients that have lupus. And so same thing, you want to prevent that from scarring. So in terms of the inflammatory scarring alopecias, we have that category. Then we have the more common categories. So the majority of women that come in to see me have female pattern hair loss, otherwise known as androgenetic alopecia. And just like we all know, there's male pattern hair loss. We've known that for a long time. Female pattern hair loss does exist, and it's just represented under recognized and not talked about as much.
But I also see a lot of women that they don't necessarily have, you know, the bald pattern, but they just have really thin hair where you could see their scalp.
Yes.
Like, what is that from?
It's a diffuse form of hair loss. And it's basically men and women, they have different ways of balding. They have different patterns. So the pattern you're describing with that diffuse hair loss and sort of the part gets wider and the central scalp and a little bit of the temporal recession, that's usually how women have their balding pattern and their hair loss pattern compared to men. Just going back to touch on it, another form of hair loss, which is very common in both genders, but I see it more in female patients, is something called telogen effluvium. And that's when you have rapid shedding of the hair. So a lot of times you see it or you hear about it after pregnancy, a couple months later, you might have a rapid shedding, a diffuse shedding of hair. And it's very alarming because you're in the shower and clumps of hair are coming out, or you're seeing it in the sink or in the hairbrush or on the bed. And it can happen after any type of shock to the body. So any type of stress. So pregnancy is very stressful, or a surgery, or a big stress, not, you know, daily stresses and nuisances, but something like death in the family, loss of a job, a divorce, rapid weight loss, any type of restrictive diets, that can lead to telogen effluvium. You also need to make sure when you're seeing somebody with hair loss that they don't have underlying medical conditions. So thyroid disease is a very common condition, especially in women. About 10% of women will develop some form of thyroid abnormality, and that could lead to hair changes. And then just going down the list of things, you want to rule out any new medications, want to rule out any nutritional deficiencies, which are really rare in this country, thank goodness. But there are times when people are iron deficient or have deficiencies in other things, but it's not as common.
But isn't hormones, like people always say, check your hormones. Are your hormones okay?
Exactly. So that ties back into, so what is androgenetic alopecia? So andro refers to hormones, basically mainly testosterone specifically. And androgenetic, genetic means just that. It's the luck of the draw, the roll of the dice, how we were born. So as women mature, they have less estrogen. And testosterone levels don't increase, but they play more of a role. So testosterone is what's responsible, and the byproducts of testosterone are what are responsible for causing hair miniaturization and decreased hair growth and the thinning that we see in both men and women. And so with men, we do have decreased testosterone as we mature. Women, you have decreased estrogen and more of an effect of the testosterone. Not necessarily more testosterone, but just more relative effect of the testosterone. And so you don't necessarily have to have hypertestosterone. So a lot of times if you check the labs, all the labs look fine, but the effects of the testosterone around the hair follicle are more susceptible at a later age. Additionally, the genetic, and we don't know the exact combination of things that lead to baldness, but we do know there's receptors and there's molecules, and some people are more sensitive to the effects of testosterone. And I bring that up because sometimes we see female pattern hair loss. Unfortunately, I have patients that come in their 20s or 30s, and you can have premature both male and female pattern hair loss. And so it's not just something that occurs later in life. But about 50% of women after the age of 50 do have some noticeable signs of female pattern hair loss.
Okay, so what could these women do? Like who can expect to get a benefit and who really shouldn't bother?
And we always want to have an answer. And usually there's not a good answer. And that's unfortunate because human beings like control and like to be able to blame things. So often you can't predict. And so some people come in and say, you know, my mom and my dad have full heads of hair and I have this. And well, doesn't always work like that. But it's not uncommon that women will come in and say, oh, I have a couple aunts, or my mother had very thin hair, and they're in their 80s, and I don't want to end up like that. And that's one of the things that will bring them in to initiate treatment. So one of the things in terms of trying to create a treatment plan is education, affirming that what they have is normal. Because a lot of women come in and they think they're the only ones suffering from this. And it also, it's a stressful period because it does sort of indicate that we're getting a little bit more mature. I keep using that mature word
exactly.
Instead of, you know, older.
Well, because, you know what, no one talks about women's hair loss.
Exactly.
It's all men's hair loss.
Exactly.
On a personal note, when I first noticed things were changing for my hair, you know, I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't know anyone else that had this issue. And it turns out two things were happening to me personally. One is my hair is 100% white. No one out there who knows what I look like can even imagine what I would look like with white hair. I've been coloring my hair since I'm 25. And apparently the hair follicle is thinner when it's gray, correct?
It can appear thinner.
Yeah. So I have, you know, less density in my hair. But then I also was finding that I was getting, you know, some spaces in my hair without the hair growth. So, you know, I freaked. I'm in the public eye. You know, I'm someone that actually, my beauty is always like all about my hair, you know, my skin and my hair. And it was kind of scary. So I went to see you and, you know, you automatically gave me this treatment, PRP.
Yes.
So would you, and I have to say it worked. It was a little painful, a little expensive, but so worth it. But could you tell everyone what it is?
Certainly. So PRP is one of the most recent and newest advances in medicine and specifically hair loss. So PRP stands for platelet-rich plasma. So the platelets are these bags. They're technically not even cells, but they're these bags that are floating through our bloodstream. And when we get injured, either internally or externally, the platelets, they rupture and they release all these growth factors and regenerative molecules. And these things help promote tissue healing. And so originally PRP was used in athletes. And before going to surgery, some interesting orthopedists started playing around with the PRP and injecting it into these injured joints. And they found that it was able to push off patients' need for surgery. So in the lab and elsewhere, people started saying, well, what else can platelets do? And we started using it for collagen rejuvenation on the face. And then some early pioneers started using it in practice. And then about 4 years ago, I said, hey, you know, this is interesting. I'm not quite sure why exactly this would work, but it's the science is looking good. And so I said, I have to start trying it. And so I started trying it on some patients, and lo and behold, I saw results. Now, what do results mean? And this is part of understanding, is I always tell patients that no matter what you do, whether it's PRP or other treatments, when you are having hair loss, you can only think about hair growth. How can I get more growth? And what you forget is that how do you stop the loss? How do you minimize the loss? How do you minimize the thinness and the shedding? So that's success if you can do that. It's a harder thing to see, but about 50% of patients will get an increase in hair thickness and density and some regrowth with PRP.
50%.
50. In what I've seen. Now,
yeah.
That's just in my use of it and what I've seen amongst my patients. There's, unfortunately, currently there's no definitive case-controlled randomized studies. They are coming, but it's not there quite yet. But I started doing it, and I went from saying, okay, this seems like it could work, to, yes, this works, and I can now offer this consciously, that I know that this is something that I can promote to patients and give them an option. Before PRP, I used to say, okay, we have Rogaine, and we could potentially do some oral medications, and then there's hair transplant. And there was nothing in between. Mm. People are like, well, I don't want to get a $15,000 hair transplant. And it's generally safe, but there's some invasive things involved that people do. You know, it works and it's great, but it's end of the road.
And do you think Rogaine works?
Rogaine is a benefit for slowing the process down. I do not think it, quote unquote, works in regrowth. And I don't think it has a big wow effect, but it's something that does benefit in terms of slowing the progression. The PRP results are more beneficial when you're using the Rogaine. Rogaine alone, I do try to get people to start that, but by itself, I'm not super impressed. So some people come in and say, I don't want to do Rogaine because it's a pain to do. And, you know, I have to do
it
at night.
It's messy.
It's messy. But, you know, in PRP, it's natural. And people like that. It's your platelets. There are no side effects short of some of the discomfort that you can attest to. You know, I like to say, in terms of the pain, talking about that, it's like the gym. You know, you're not going to stay in good shape unless you expend some effort. If 10 is the worst pain of your life and 1 is a nothing, I tell patients it's probably about a 2 to 3 out of 10.
I would give it a 6. I mean, no, it hurts. It hurts. But it's not that. I mean, look, I've done it because I did the first series,
yeah,
which was what, 5 times?
The way I do it, I do one treatment per month for 4 months. That's what I call the loading phase, where we try to jumpstart the hair follicles. And then I recommend a maintenance phase, usually every 4 months. Sometimes people can push it to 6 months. And so it's like 2 to 3 times per year for the maintenance.
Right. And what does it normally cost? I know it varies where you live.
It varies. And so
you're in New Jersey, not New York. So not as bad as New York.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
So New York, you know, everything's more expensive here. I charge $700. And basically, I'm a true believer that it's the platelets that are doing the heavy lifting and having the results. There's a lot of things out there where people say PRP with stem cells. Stem cells haven't quite made it to real life. They're in the lab and there's great potential of them, but there's no such thing as really true stem cells out there. I don't personally believe that those things help any more than just sort of being able to charge more. That's my opinion. I also don't want to outprice anybody. I know it is pricey, but I feel like that's a good price point for many people to be able to get it, and there's so many people suffering from it.
Oh, I'm definitely a believer, but you don't believe in biotin or any of that stuff, do you?
The studies have never played out. The whole biotin story, so to speak, comes from, you know, back in the day, whatever you want to describe that as, 1800s, 1900s, when we didn't have as rich of a diet. If you had a biotin deficiency and it was diagnosed, so you'd have a lot of hair loss, and then you would have biotin-rich foods and things, and you'd grow your hair back. And so I said, wow, this is amazing. This is a magic cure. So somebody was smart and said, well, everybody has hair loss, and they all want to take biotin. You know, they want something to do. So that's where the biotin market came.
I make a biotin gummy, and, you know, I eat it every day. I still have hair. And people tell me that they've noticed their hair, like, coming in. You know, I can only hope that it's true.
I will never tell somebody, you know, to not take it, in the sense it's not harmful. It's more just that I can't recommend it because it hasn't been proven to be the case in a scientific way.
Right. Like most supplements.
Like most supplements. Right. Exactly. Most supplements get peed out. There is actually a recent study showing that too much biotin can actually affect certain lab tests. So if you're taking high doses of biotin and you go get certain routine blood work from your primary care doctor, those tests might be altered if you're taking too much biotin.
Well, we tell people to only eat 2 gummies, and I know there's people that eat 6 and 8 of them. So
I won't tell you to not take your gummies. You know, if you want, you can. You know, and maybe it does work for some and maybe it doesn't for others. But a lot of times people, we want something to do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, an analogy is when I'm doing skin cancer surgery, people come back and say, hey, I want something to put on my scar. And there's certain things you can recommend, usually silicone sheeting and things of that nature. But a lot of times your body is pretty amazing in its healing. And people come back and say, oh, I used this product and it got, you know, my scar went away. It's more your scar went away because it was well sutured and your body just did what it was supposed to do.
Oh, I don't know. I might disagree with the doctor. I'm only an honorary doctor, but I find,
associate.
You know, whether you put vitamin E on something or some kind of ointment that...
You are correct. It's not vitamin E, and that's another myth that I'm going to dispel now. Vitamin E actually can cause a contact dermatitis. Vitamin E keeps the wound moist. And so we found that it's not the vitamin E per se. You can use Vaseline, which can keep the area moist. So moist wounds, moist scars, and things of that nature, hydrated skin heals better. And that's sort of the concept of silicone sheeting. Silicone sheeting creates sort of a microenvironment where it's more moist and things of that nature are going on.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life. Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Well, we learned a lot about hair. Now let's go to skin, okay? Because you treat people's skin. What's the biggest complaint when people come in?
So at this time of year, you see a lot of dry skin. Once again, as we mature, our skin, and I'm starting to see it too, our legs and our skin elsewhere gets very dry and very scaly. And we don't like that. And sometimes not just dry and scaly, sometimes it becomes itchy. You can get these little patches of eczema that form. So that's a seasonal thing. So you see that pretty frequently. Of course, acne is one of the top diagnoses we always see. And we see a lot of that year round.
And what is adult acne caused by?
So adult acne, especially female adult acne, which is usually who gets the adult acne, is hormonally driven. I saw a woman today who had a clear complexion all throughout her teenage years and early 20s, and now she's breaking out. And the adult female acne usually has this characteristic picture, doesn't always, but of usually kind of the cystic, little bumps underneath the skin. They're often hard to get rid of, and they're usually on the jawline or around the mouth. And what's shown is that that same medication I mentioned before, spironolactone, which is used at times for hair loss, it has a great, great significant effect on adult female acne. So I usually will recommend that over an antibiotic combined with a retinoid. So retinoids are the first line agent in acne, in any form of acne. What it does is it helps break up all the dead skin cells that are in the follicle. And that's the process that causes acne. We have these dead skin cells. Behind that, you get a backup of oil. Within the oil, you can get bacteria growth. And then an inflammatory process. Acne is, there is a bacterial component, but acne is actually an inflammatory process. And the retinoids, they hit every level of acne. They open up the pores. They decrease oil size and oil production, so you're not as greasy, so you can't have as much bacterial growth. And they also do have some effects on the bacteria. So retinoids are the first line agent for any form of acne. Retinoids also slow down the breakdown of collagen. So there's an enzyme that naturally breaks down the collagen we have. And on the molecular level, retinoids help minimize the effect of that enzyme. So it keeps our collagen more plumped and more around. And retinoids can help with fine lines and dark spots and just overall complexion and rosy glows.
How do we keep the collagen, or can you?
So patients come in and they say, you know, I was at X, Y, and Z store and I saw all these things on the shelves. What should I do for my skin? So the two things I always recommend, two things I'd love to have every patient on, and I have my wife on it and my mom on it and myself. So sunscreen anytime you're going to be outside for a significant period of time. You have to remember, not just during summertime. If, you know, it's April and you're going outside for, you know, 45 minutes, here and there, all that sun adds up. When we're in our 60s and 70s and 80s, we see those effects. Sometimes earlier, of course. If you're going skiing, you know, you have to consider the rims of the ears, the nose. Those areas get burned pretty easily.
Top of your head.
So sunscreen for any significant sun exposure you can have. And then at nighttime, I recommend some form of a retinoid, because the retinoids are really just great for rejuvenation, cell turnover. And we talked about the decrease in collagen breakdown and the fine lines and dark spots.
And is that a prescription or non-prescription?
I think the prescription strength products work better. There are retinol products that are on the market and they work fine enough. But if you're going to do something, I would go for the actual product that technically works better. But some people don't have time to go see the doctor and get a prescription. So if you do something, a retinol-based product is a benefit. And you have to make sure that you're not overusing it. It's one of those things where less is more. Use it just so you get the benefits.
Could you put it under your eyes or not?
So you can put it very, very sparingly. It's not recommended to do that much of it or to use a very high strength. When I use retinoids, I moisturize first. And then I take a pea-sized amount and spread it to my entire face. Mm-hmm. Underneath my eyes, I might do it like once or twice a week, a very small amount. Sometimes when I see my mom, she's scaling in what's called the nasal labial folds from the nose to the lips. And she's like, I'm using that cream, but why am I getting this? And I'm like, are you just putting it like right in that area? Cause that's where you have a lot of volume loss and you're trying to stimulate collagen formation. She's like, yep. I'm like, that's not how you want to do it.
And what about rosacea? I have a lot of people that say, what do I do about my rosacea?
Sure. So rosacea is a frustrating condition. And rosacea is sort of a cousin of acne. Some people refer to rosacea as acne rosacea. It's a combination of inflammation where you get the red bumps and a vascular condition where people's blood vessels are just more sensitive. We know spicy foods and red wines and citrus fruits, things like that, you know, things that we enjoy, can cause the blood vessels to open. And so we get a combination of flushing and redness as well as bumps. Some people have both those components. Some people just have the red. Some people just have the bumps. So there's a lot of things you could do. Topical medications, some of the same ones you'd use for acne. And then we also use anti-inflammatories. There's some medications that work like steroids but are safer than steroids that are of benefit. And then some people come in for just the redness, and there's some molecules that are specifically meant to clamp down the blood vessels topically to help get rid of the redness temporarily. And at times we use lasers. Lasers actually work the best for the redness of rosacea.
Like what lasers?
There's vascular lasers, and lasers work based on wavelength and what they target. There's lasers that have a 585 and 595 wavelength. There's one laser in particular that I like called the V-beam laser. There's another one called XLV, which really help target those blood vessels and basically makes the blood vessels go away, makes you less red.
I think lasers are amazing.
Lasers are amazing, and people come in, they say, I want laser. There's so many different uses of them. It's not just one lasers.
How much of your practice is lasers?
I'd say about 25 to 30% of my practice is cosmetic. And within that, I do a fair amount of lasers.
Okay. Some people, that's their entire business.
Exactly. Some people, and we owe a debt of gratitude to those people because a lot of those often are doing the trials to prove the efficacy of those lasers.
All right. Well, let's talk about wrinkles, or I like to call them lines.
Lines.
So there's like—
Character lines.
Right. So what could you do about lines in the face?
So lines in the face, depends where in the face. And so if we're talking about most commonly, we call them the 11s, there's lines in between the brows. That region is called the glabella, and there's three muscles there that when we use that over years and years and decades, they start to make those muscles, they create creases in the skin. So lines in the glabella region in between the brows and the forehead lines and what we call the crow's feet around the eyes, Botox is the best medication for that. And I love Botox.
I hate Botox. So we're going to have
what don't you like about it?
We're going to have a debate. Number one, it's botulism. Yeah. It's poison.
Sure.
So you're putting it in your face.
Indeed.
Okay. It's got to go somewhere. It's got to end up in the brain. It's got to, it doesn't just like go into thin air.
It's an interesting perspective, and that's what people do think.
Right?
But it is created from botulinum toxin. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's so diluted out.
Mm-hmm.
It's so diluted out, it has no adverse effects like eating a bad—
It's like micro-dosing heroin.
Well, we do that for pain. And, you know, God forbid when somebody has cancer, we're using poisonous substances to try to eradicate that. Now, not comparing, obviously, cancer and cosmetics, but it's basically we are using such a micro-dose, if you want to look at it, that it is safe. So it's not like you're eating a old can of beans that you found and you're getting a whole dose of botulinum that will kill you.
All right. So I've done it a couple times. And when it first came out, I must have been in my 40s. And we didn't know, you know, if it was good, if it was bad. It just came out. I had two of the worst side effects ever.
Brow drop?
I had a brow drop once. And my husband thought I was having a stroke. And I never admitted to him that it was Botox. And the other time I had a, you know, an eyebrow that like shot up.
Yes, the Spock brow.
And I went to like the best New York derms that you can go to. It just, and I'm like, all right, God is telling me something, and I just stopped. That's one thing. Okay.
Yep,
so I've had bad. I've also seen so many women. I've seen really good Botox, okay? But I've seen so many women who have this like intense, shiny forehead.
Yes.
And the rest of their face and body is wrinkled. And it doesn't, and it
doesn't match.
Looks weird.
It does look weird.
So when you get to a certain age, like, it just doesn't work.
So I agree with you. Let's address the side effects. So anything can have potential side effects. Basically how botulinum toxin works, or Botox, is it basically it causes the muscles that make facial expression. it minimizes their movement. You know, so some people say
it freezes them. It paralyzes it. It stops it.
It doesn't make a complete paralysis unless you use a large dose.
Yes, and until it leaves your body, then you start moving again.
And it's a protein. It's basically a protein that's taken up by a receptor, and that protein breaks down over time, over the next couple months. So it doesn't stay in your body. It doesn't eat away at your brain. It doesn't do anything. That's definitely been proven.
Mm-hmm.
That should allay your concerns there. It doesn't work like that. You get Botox every 4 to 6 months. Some people do it even more frequently for decades, and you're not going to have any long-term side effects. But even in the best of hands, you can get a brow drop. Basically, there's a muscle around the eye called, you know, the orbicularis oculi. And if you put it too close to the brow, you will get that brow drop. But sometimes there's even diffusion. Even in the best of hands, people know their anatomy. You can inject it and you can get the Botox going in a place that gives you a spock or give you a drop. But I always tell patients, you know, it doesn't happen frequently, but it is a risk.
And now they're putting Botox under the chin for necks.
So there's something called platysma bands that you sort of see when they clench down on their teeth. You could see those bands, especially if somebody is very thin, and that can release those muscle bands. There's a muscle down in the lower face. If you put a little Botox, it can give you a little upward turn of the smile. I'm a big fan of Botox, but if you can do aging gracefully, it's perfect. And I'm an advocate for that, and I wish I could be more like that. When you do these things, you have to do them conservatively. I call it like the newscaster look. And it's a look. You see these people on TV and they're frozen. Like, they are just completely frozen. And I personally do not like that look. I hate that look. And it looks like they're done. They don't look natural. There's no expression.
And how many actresses do you see and you're like, who? I can't even tell if that's who it is.
And that happens. And that sometimes happens
a lot.
Certain stage of life.
Yeah.
And I feel for people, that's their career. And they're so wrapped up in what they look like. I can empathize with that because, you know, just with my hair loss,
right.
So I can imagine as an actor, somebody who's in the public eye and you have it and you're a certain look at one point, and then all of a sudden you're changing and you don't. You try to capture that. And sometimes you overjump it. And when you overjump it, whether it's an overdone eye job or too much filler and cheek implants, it all can be done well. And,
right.
and I have many colleagues that do it amazingly well. But some people think that, you know, go big or go home. And I think there's like this over-lasered look, this over-Botox, over-filled, over-lasered look. And just like you're saying, it's like people, they might look quote-unquote good, but it almost doesn't look natural.
But I think of it like when I'm weeding my garden, okay, you're making it look better, but like, where do you stop? Where does the obsession, when am I done?
It's true.
And it's the same thing on your face. It's like, you know, okay, I'll do this. I'll do a little bit of this. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, that's not working. Let me do this too. And then all of a sudden, what do? You're in your 60s, 70s.
So there's a high degree of body dysmorphic syndrome and facial dysmorphic syndrome and people trying to chase after every single, do you see this crease? Do you see this wrinkle? And it's a serious thing. And I will tell people, you really don't need this. I actually think that you should not be pushing things that people don't need and put the brakes on it when they need it.
Yeah. But I also think there's a certain time in your life where you just have to say, okay, okay, I'm not that anymore. This is who I am now.
In hospice, man.
Yeah. No. And, you know, I mean, look, I plan to be, you know, a grandmother one day. Yeah. You know, I don't want to look like one, but okay.
You look great personally. And 25 years ago, these products weren't around. You know, collagen was the first filler out there. Even actually silicone was the first filler out there.
God.
Yeah, believe it or not. And it was actually a decent filler, but.
Except now all these women have to take their silicones out because it's affecting their body.
That's a different type of makeup.
But I'm a holistic health coach because I really do believe that you have to be a little careful of what you're constantly putting in your body.
I agree. Completely. I agree. And, you know, tying into the hormones and girls are having their periods earlier. Yeah, you have to be careful of what we're putting in, what we're consuming, what's in our environment. No doubt. So these things weren't around before. And so people did age gracefully.
Right.
And there's a lot to be said for that. When used correctly and in moderation, like everything, you can make that case for everything. These products, whether it's fillers, lasers, Botox, or other approaches, can provide a certain person benefit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will accept that. And I do believe that it's okay to contour if you're someone that wants to contour your face. I don't like contouring. That's okay. We're allowed to have different things. And I'm also very excited because I think there's going to be more things on the horizon that will help. And I know one day there's going to be a laser that gets rid of, you know, that 11 between your brow. So
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I will sign up for that.
I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. And what do you think about the, you know, the body treatments? Like, do you think, you know, whatever those things are called that gets rid of the fat cells? Cool sculpt, do they work?
They work. Once again, you know, work is always, you really encapsulate what work means. You can't come in and be obese and say, cool sculpt me, and you know, you're going to walk out with a six pack. Cool sculpt is really specifically meant for somebody who isn't relatively decent shape for their age, but you know, the hormones are slowing down and they've got certain pockets of fat. They got, you know, the love handles and the spare tire and the thighs and things of that nature. And they're like, this is annoying. I go to the gym five times a week and I can't get rid of it. So Cool Sculpt is helpful for that. Once again, when you get Cool Sculpt, it's not like you just grab this pocket of fat and it just all goes away. You'll have about a 30% reduction with each treatment you do. And so there are benefits to it.
30% is pretty good.
It is good.
It's painful though, right?
It can be.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm a believer, you know, pain is pain. Mine never matters.
There's Cool Sculpt. There's two different ones.
The cooling technique basically is based on, if you cool the fat cells to such a degree, you kill the fat cells. And fat cells are sort of like their finite amount. So once they're gone, they're gone. You know, what happens when you put on the weight again, you'll add the fat to
a different area.
Well,
right?
To the cells that persist. It's not like you're going to get rid of every single.
Right.
But so there's the cooling and then there's the heating. They both work. By working, you have to sort of meet with somebody and really assess your goals and really have a realistic goal. So have a nutrition plan, a workout plan, and then basically you can do these other things. There's another technique out there called M-Sculpt, which actually causes these micro contractions and can tone muscles. That's for a very unique group of people.
Why?
Well, because you have to be in good shape. Once again, if you have too much adipose, too much fat covering your muscles. So it's meant for somebody who's in really good shape, who just needs to, who wants to get toned up. I mean, personally, I think it's somebody who's probably a model or an actor.
Okay, so now I've got a speed round of questions.
Fire away.
All right, what's the last thing you ate?
Cheese sandwich.
What's your drink of choice?
I hate to admit this, Diet Pepsi. I know.
Diet Pepsi. I was talking about tequila and vodka or wine.
I was going to get to that.
Diet Pepsi. All right, now your health coach is starting. Okay, I'm taking over this episode.
Please.
No Diet Pepsi.
I'm really trying to cut back. My wife refuses to buy it for me.
Good.
She knows.
I
know it's unhealthy.
Do you drink coffee?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of coffee. I'm a big believer in caffeine.
Caffeine's fine, but there's green tea, there's espresso. I know you're a guy that likes chemicals, but it's... That and you like science? Go read.
I know.
Go read about the science.
Denial.
All right,
it's denial. Great. But my drink of choice is vodka.
Vodka. Okay. How do you drink it?
Like a martini up with blue cheese olives. My favorite.
Nice. What's your personal skincare routine?
Less is more. I use a moisturizer sunscreen in the morning. And
which one?
Whatever's in my drawer. Usually some form of a sample that somebody wants me to try. And then in the evening, if I remember, I am a guy at the end of the day, I try to do some form of a retinoid a couple times a week, maybe.
What do you think a skincare item that most women don't have but need?
Some form of a retinoid. I'll tell you a skincare item that I hate that women have. Two things. I'm not a big fan of exfoliators.
Okay.
I think exfoliating is actually quite bad, or routine exfoliating, I think, dries out the skin and can possibly cause more acne and more dryness and decreased glow, so to speak. Mm. And second thing is the magnifying mirror.
Oh, gosh.
Now, you probably advocate
it. I don't.
For putting on makeup, I imagine.
I don't. I don't believe in magnifying mirrors. I believe in skinny mirrors. I believe in good light mirrors.
I'm glad to hear that.
I never look at a mirror in a airplane bathroom.
Magnifying mirror. One of my professors back in training at Tulane used to say, do you have a magnifying mirror at home? And if you answered yes, she'd say, throw it out. That's the first thing you have to do, because nobody sees you like that.
Right.
You take that magnifying mirror, you're like, oh my God, what's going on?
You don't look like that either.
Exactly.
No,
you don't look like that.
You don't.
So I wish women would get rid of that.
Okay.
And men too.
So when you talk about exfoliating, do you mean just a washcloth, a loofah, or are you talking about scrubs? Are you talking about, you know, whatever those treatments are that gets your cells off?
So I'm not against all exfoliation. If you have like one of those Clarisonic brushes or a competitor of that, if you do that from time to time, once a week, once every 2 weeks, it's not horrible. But some people come in and I say, you know, what treatments or medication are you using? And they say, well, I exfoliate. I bought this exfoliator at CVS and I bought this. And they think the acne is caused by dirt. And so they're physically scrubbing and rubbing and they're using loofahs and they're just stripping away the natural moisturizing elements of the skin. And they're creating irritation and it makes their skin more prone to acne. So that's what I mean by exfoliating. You know, there's a role for chemical peels. There's a role for exfoliating, but not exfoliating in a way that's too harsh and too frequent.
So you're probably not a fan of the Obagi method, which is purely exfoliating.
Nah.
It's a little rough.
It's a little rough.
Yeah.
Moderation.
Moderation. Okay. So tell me if these things are worth it in your opinion, facials.
My opinion, people ask me, what do you think about facials? I think facials are like massages. So, if you have back pain or you have a serious orthopedic issue, if you get a massage, it's not going to address the underlying issue, but it'll make you feel good. I think the same thing with facials.
How about sheet masks?
Not a huge fan of masks. I think they do more harm than good, but people think they're doing something.
How about facial rollers, those new jade rollers, whatever those are you see all over Instagram?
I'm not a big fan. There's something called derma rolling, too, that I was interviewed on in the past. People like to be physically involved in their regimens. And they feel like they're doing something. Or like back in the day, they used to have like those clenchers. You could like do the muscle exercises. And so I don't believe in a lot of those things.
Yeah. Facial exercises. Do they work?
In theory, I mean, if you're stimulating the muscles of facial expression, but it would have to be such a amount of facial movement. In reality, no, it does not work.
Okay. Well, this is really interesting, and I want to make sure that I get a prescription for retinoids before the day's done. But where could people find you?
So I practice in northern New Jersey, primarily in Livingston, but I run between a number of different offices because I do skin cancer surgery in a few different offices. But two of the days per week, I'm in Livingston doing cosmetic dermatology, hair loss, and some of the general derm.
And no Instagram?
I should have Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of in that funny generation where I know Facebook. I can email and do things of that nature.
Well, your daughter, hopefully, will be coming up and she could do it.
She might develop the new Instagram.
Exactly. But this is really informative and I really appreciate that you came in. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bobby. I appreciate you having me.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.